Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
This disconnect and out of touchness with, especially as a patient, we talk about value disparity and discrepancy. Like when I go in and I've had such an amazing experience, I'm happier to pay, right? Like I feel good about a purchase, even if it's a healthcare purchase. I'm like, that was amazing. Like I felt great about it. And it either creates more value on the upside, or at least reduces some of the pain of paying something, because you're like, wow, that was amazing. So it all really sort of, I know I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but it all really works together and is a complex tapestry. And again, one of the reasons why I think private practice makes so much sense. And, you know, does it fix all the problems? No. Do we still have interoperability problems and coordination problems and all that? Yes. But like, it really just so fundamentally restores a patient-physician relationship that is the basic requirement of the best and highest quality healthcare. And it's what we need more of.
Amen. So Preston, how do we do this?
All right. I'm just going to like freestyle a little bit and I'll tell you how we do it. First of all, I love the community idea. I think LinkedIn's a great community. There's a Slack group that we have, which is open and free to people. Welcome to join. It's through /health. If you want to reach out, hit me up. I can send invites.
What is that again? Jay, we'll put it right here on the screen.
/health. So there's a sign up sheet somewhere. I'll put it on the website, but go to /health.com. There's resources. So I'm a big believer in like no secrets at all. Like I give away all the best information I could possibly have or make up or pretend is true, like all the time. And I have no auspices about it. So like on the /health website, there's free like P&L templates. There's free balance sheet templates. There's free startup guides, launch guides for starting a private practice, like all these things. Because like, yeah, there is a lot to kind of consider. But one of the big things I always say to people, and I've written about it before, so if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, if you're a physical therapist, if whatever, and you were like, man, I want to start this, but I'm scared. Just know that if you start it and it doesn't work, they are never going to stop hiring doctors. Yeah. You will always find a place that you can go work. Yes, I understand there's some financial elements of it, but like if you wanted to try and start and do something different or start your private practice in 3 years later, I promise the hospital will hire you. I promise another group will hire you, because we are facing a tremendous shortage and good doctors are hard to come by. So like, don't worry too much about what that future holds. You know, get into one of these types of communities and sort of stop thinking too about like how complicated everybody has made it. Another thing I'd say is like, we have way more time than we think we do a lot of the time. So like sometimes I talk to some younger people or, you know, clinicians who are maybe in their like 30s, like more in the beginning of their career. And I know it feels scary and stuff, but like you could almost just sort of mess up for like 10 years and then you're 40, which to a 20-year-old sounds old. But now as I knock on the door of 40, I'm like, yeah, it's not so bad. Like, and then you could get started and you're starting from experience, or do something different like at 40, and then another decade you're only going to be 50. Like our lives have gotten so much longer and we're so capable of doing so much more for so long. Like just to sort of tear down that fear that there is community out there, they're never going to stop hiring doctors or clinicians, and there's and you have a long time to do these things and figure it out. On another side of it, like because the finances are scary, and especially people coming out of school, they don't, you know, in a lot of debt and all these different things, and someone's like, here's a big check and it's going to help you pay down your debt. Cool. There's like two things you can do. One, you can go start a practice, and depending on the specialty, it can be much, much simpler. Like I talked to this is sort of, you know, pretty different, right? But like a direct primary care doctor, for example, there's these groups out there that'll start up a direct primary care practice for you, but they charge like $50,000. And I'm like, don't pay that amount of money.
Like MDV VIP or?
It's not MDVIP. It's another one. I don't want to like throw shade, so I just like won't mention it. But like, you know, $50,000 to start a DPC practice. I was like, I was talking to a doctor, and this is that sort of like, it can be so much simpler than we want it to, than everyone else makes it out to be. I was like, okay, go right now and talk to everybody you know and tell them that in 3 months you are going to launch your DPC practice. I know you have no idea what you're going to do, but just tell them that. And then, you know, kind of create an offer and what it's going to look like and say, on average, I'm going to charge $100 a month for this. But as like a founding member, if you prepay your first 3 months, it's only going to be $50 or something. And then, you know, you'll get a founding member fee forever of, you know, $80, and it'll never go up, something like that. And then you just go sell something. Like, we always want to like spend all the time and all the energy and raise, people want to raise money, people want to take out loans, people want to do this. And it's such a lean model. You can go do that. And you can go say, all right, if I can make, you know, on pre-sales, X amount of dollars. So if I can get 100 patients or something in this 3 month time period, then I will launch. And if not, then you give everybody their money back. And then you say, I'm really sorry it didn't work out, but here's a full refund. You know, I'll try again some other time. So it's like, you can de-risk and it can be super simple like that. Now, obviously in a different practice, if you want to start an orthopedic practice, you have insurance to deal with, you have all these different things, you need somewhere to operate, so you need privileges somewhere, et cetera, et cetera. But you can still kind of look at it and say, all right, what are like the basic fundamentals that I need? And there's only like a list this big. And I know because like we write this list and like we help people like go through it and you can do all of these things. And there's so many tools and resources out there that you could say, all right, I'm going to go with a minimal investment, right? Like I'm going to go buy a little bit of price transparency data. Like CMS publishes their rates. I can assume like 140% of like a CMS rate could be a commercial plan, or I can go to another company and spend like $1,000 and get like literally the price transparency for every commercial plan, like, you know, in the area for all the specialties around me. So I can see like what the rates are going to be. And I can make a pretty good financial model because like, no, like it's just going to be me. I'm going to have an MA. I'm going to have an office space. It's going to be like this much money. And here I need 20 patients a week or whatever, just to break even. And then when you can just like break it down to those basic numbers, I'm not talking about writing a 50 page business plan and sending decks and raising. I'm just talking about like one sheet, one Excel file. Do these numbers work? Can in my brain I do this? Can I go find 20 patients that need this type of service that I can then like just break even on? Because there's a tremendous power in breaking even. And yeah, maybe you're not going to like step away and make, you know, 400K the first year. You're not going to make, you know, $1 million or whatever within 2 years. But like you can lay the foundation and you can like survive, right? Like you can feed the family, you can do whatever, because you like, you know what you need to break even. And when you know that, it really unleashes like this whole wide world of possibility. And by the way, in this financial model, like, well, I need a little bit of money to get started. Well, great. There's banks out there now, and you know, that I would be happy to talk more about or recommend, that like really cater just to doctors starting private practices. And like, you owe some debt on that, but you put it in the model. And can I cover that debt? That goes into your overhead effectively. And can you break even on it? So like, there's just so many tools and mechanisms. If we just like, here's how we break down the fear. You join a community, you realize they're always going to hire doctors, you have 20 years to screw up and you're still going to be fine. And then if we can like give you these tools, hey, here's the roadmap. It's, people do it all the time. It's great that you're already in the community, and just go do this. And you have a pretty high likelihood of succeeding in it. Then like, we just unleash this whole possibility. And there's more, and there's tech, and there's tools, and there's whatever, but it's all there. We just need to show more people that it's possible and stitch it together and patch it and package it together in such a way that more can take advantage of it. I think that's maybe a solution.
Yeah. No, I love the simplicity too, right? Like the KISS principle, keep it simple. Two things that kind of came up in my mind as you were talking there. Number one is, there's so many different situations out there, right? Like we talk about this pendulum of employed physicians, but there's also people that are in private practice and they want to maintain their autonomy, but they're like, the finances have gotten so difficult and I've built this machine. And I'm not necessarily, I'm just going to use myself as an example, but say you build something and you build it to the point where you're like, all right, Medicare rates are coming down. Commercial rates are coming down every single year. The cuts are coming, staffing expenses, overhead, everything's going up every year. So at some point that business model starts to shift into a loss mode. So how do you, in that situation, unwind that clock? Because a lot of practices are saying, well, we'll just sell to private equity, right? We're still private. We're still, but, and then you hear the miserable stories of yeah. people that have done that and they wish they wouldn't, because they're like, well, I'm not an employed physician. I'm not hospital employed. So how do you maintain your independence and how do you unwind or, you know, unravel that machine that you've created, right? Do yeah. you just say, sorry, I'm going to have to cut 50% of my staff and I'm going to go direct care model here and just charge cash. And I think for that may be a little bit scarier to some physicians because mm-hmm. there are people in that mold. The second yeah. thing, just keep that in mind. Second thing is you brought up a great point about like life expectancy and things like that. I would not have been able to start Whole Health when I first came out in practice. So I don't look back on any of the years, the 2 years of hospital employment. They were the worst 2 years professionally in my career, but I would not undo that for any amount of freedom. Like it was meant to be, and it lit a fire in me so vigorously and that I was like committed to private practice. And I feel like that happened for a reason. And even like my employment at the private practice here in Pennsylvania, seeing that, it was like, all right, I need to do my own thing. So, and I started my practice when I was 40. So yeah. I was a lot wiser at 40 than I was. Well,
yeah. I mean, honestly, Preston, I love that. Like, you know, you can screw up for 20 years and still make it. And yeah. what it reminds me of, I mean, you guys know Gary Vee. He says it all the time, right? I mean, Gary Vee is, you know, a wildly successful guy and social media influencer and, you know, does a bunch of different stuff. But, you know, the one thing I always see these videos and like these like young entrepreneurs, 23-year-old, you know, 30-year-old kids that are coming up to him is like, you know, trying to give him a pitch or trying to do this or that, or, you know, what can I do? And he's just like, do a bunch of stuff. You just, your 20s and 30s, just go get experiences. He's like, you're not even on the precipice of getting to where you want to be. Like, you can literally fail for the next 10 years and it's not a big deal. Right. And not a big deal in terms, but like, you don't look at those things as failures. And to your point, it's like that time, it's like, okay, now I definitely know what I don't want. Right. I mean, there's yeah. a huge value in that.
There is.
Because you could get to your 40s and then spend the next 10 years figuring out, oh crap, I do not want to do this. Right. It's just like all those experiences are not failures or wasted of time. It's just like, those are the building blocks that get you to that. Right. Exactly. And to Preston's point, that's sort of what I was getting at was, you know, now you're starting at 40 or, you know, whatever, but now you're starting from experience, which is right. different than the last 20 years of, okay, I feel like I was wasting time. You're not wasting time. It's just like, you know.
100%, yeah, 100%. You don't start from zero. You start from experience.
Exactly.
And so, but yeah, and so I think that's great. And it's such a good example that, you know, you're living. And I think hustle culture these days, and like we get wrapped up in like, oh, if you're not Mark Zuckerberg, or you're not this person, or, you know, haven't done it by the, you didn't drop out of college. But if you actually look at objectively at data and, you know, yeah, there's some unicorns out there, but they're the ones that like make the news and do all the stuff. But on average, like the most successful entrepreneurs are 45 plus. They're not 20-year-olds in hoodies. Like they're people who worked and got deep expertise in an area or broad set of expertise or experience. And then they went and started companies and then they were successful doing them. So that's, yeah, number one. Number two is I think, yeah, people like, you know, businesses can really start. And it's great, Dr. Molly, how you're so intentional about, you know, culture and things, because, you know, Michael Porter, I think, said, you know, cultural strategy for breakfast, because all of that stuff like doesn't matter if like the culture isn't right. So we have to always be careful about building these sort of business machines that just run away without us and nobody like being there to like kind of keep them under control. And it works on the finance side too, especially as CMS continues to do the dumbest shit over and over and over again by like reducing physician reimbursement rates, which, by the way, I know everyone listening to this knows this, but it drives me nuts. Like, physician fee schedule isn't like how much a doctor gets paid directly. Yeah, it's like how exactly. much revenue they're giving the practice to pay for everything. So it's like, this is not a lot of money to cover all of the things. And especially as you cut, and that you cut these conversion factors year after year, and then we have these RUCs doing what God knows what the hell they're up to and who's getting what money and budget neutrality and all this. Anyways,
I'm glad you brought that up because that is, for the people that are not medical out there, if there's any patients out there watching this, there's what's called a facility fee, just for my world, and a professional fee. So facility fee is, I do a total knee, total hip, what the facility, whether it's an ASC, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a surgical hospital like I operate at, which is physician-owned, that is the majority of the reimbursement goes to that. And there's a lot more costs there, right? With, for instance, total joints, implants, anesthesia, all of the OR setup, the staff, all of that, pharmaceutical stuff. Then the professional fee is, everybody thinks, as you mentioned, that's what the doc, like, they don't write the check out to Ryan Molly. That gets paid to the Whole Health, to the business, to the practice. But then that practice has to pay for me, over 30 employees. It has to pay for my mortgage. It has to pay for all of our malpractice insurance. It has to pay for all of my employees' healthcare, which continues to go up by almost 20 to 25%.
Right, of course it does.
Every single year. All the medical supplies, you know, after COVID just got ridiculously expensive, and everybody wants a raise every year. So everything goes up, 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 up. Reimbursement goes down. The only person in my practice that really feels this on a day in, day out, year in, year out is me, the sole business right. owner. And that's not to make you feel bad for me. I do well, but I do well because I've created an environment and a culture that allows me to do well, and I'm creative and entrepreneurial. But so just patients out there, at the end of the day, your doctor for a total knee, we get reimbursed $1,000, the practice. What the doctor may actually see is about $150 to $200 after overhead's paid. And then we have to pay taxes on that. So $75 to $100 for me to do your hip or knee, and I have to take care of you for 90 days after that and for nothing.
It's pretty wild.
I think the other piece of this too is, and you know, we're talking about, you know, kind of shifting into the solution mindset piece too. It's like, you know, you educate patients on, you know, their outcome expectations, you know,
risk factors, all that.
Yeah, they're looking at identifying and answering questions to questions you didn't even know you had, right? Which I think is great. I think the other piece to this too, though, is like educating patients on their insurance, right? Like, patients don't understand their coverage and their insurance at all. They get a call from it. What do you mean this medicine's not covered? I've been taking it forever. But my policy changed. How? Why wasn't I notified of that? It's just like, okay, have you guys, anyone, patient that I've ever had a procedure, have you ever looked at an EOB? Have you ever looked at it? Like, do you even understand the economics of any of this stuff? And a lot of them don't. I mean, I've asked patients before. I'm like, how much do you think a surgeon gets paid to? Like, I mean, again, this is like the person that's cutting you open. This is like getting on an airplane and Daffy Duck is flying it, right? It's like, I'm turning around and I'm going and waiting for the next one. It's like, do you know how much the guy that's cutting you open? He probably makes $25,000. I'm like, let me explain something to you. If this guy made $25,000, he would not be doing 800 total joints a year. Okay. So putting that into perspective, I just feel like educating, you know, patients and just like the general population on like the insurance coverage is like, it's the best business model in the world. No one knows exactly how it works. They charge a boatload of money. Year over year, they pay out less and less. It's like, we should figure that out. Because,
well, I mean, I don't know if I go that far because I couldn't sleep at night, because to me, it's the most evil business model in the world.
You know what I mean?
I get it. But but now I feel like it's rearing its ugly head. I feel like the bubble's about to burst. I've been saying this for years. I said, this country, the bubble is about to burst. And when CEOs are getting assassinated in the streets with, you know, inscriptions on the bullets that clearly lead to, you know, a motive here, where are we at, Preston? I mean, is this, I'm using that example, but like, I see people that are, you know, making him into a saint, the kid that shot Ryan Thompson. And I don't think that's right. But if it creates awareness and a movement to get this ship back on track, I'm not, again, saying that that death or that life was justified, but it's just, it's scary. And I'm thinking about our boys, your kids, your daughters, like, where are we heading?
Yeah, I don't, well, so I think that the woes and ails of the healthcare system is just that it's a systems problem. So, you know, the murder of Brian Thompson was terrible and unexcusable and tragic and had nothing at all to do with him, which is what makes it all the worse, because it's not him, it's a system issue. And we have to look at healthcare system as part of, as actually a subsystem of a macro system that we have, that we function within, which is a system of profit maximization and capitalism. And I'm not trying to poo-poo capitalism or say that it's like, doesn't work or whatever. And, you know, that's a whole different type of discussion, but it's important just to recognize.
Yeah, this podcast has got a lot longer.
Yeah. The sort of like the like cascading sub effects, like, you know, if we look at it, United Health Group, for example, is a publicly traded for-profit private enterprise that's allowed to function like that. So if you just look at it on those merits alone, like, I have no problem with United Health Group. They are doing what is they are allowed to do and operate within this macro system that we have. Their job, actually, their first job is shareholder value maximization. And shareholders can actually sue United Health Groups, the board, the executives, everybody, if they feel like they're not meeting their fiduciary responsibility to maximize shareholder value. So if you just look at that incentive, just like that little piece of it, you immediately see like why these companies are operating this way. And you in some ways can't be that mad at them, because they are in a different way, like, necessarily required to do what they're doing, to maximize with the mechanisms and the business that they've chosen, that the government allows them to operate within, that the economic system that we have, that the pervasive system of the United States incentivizes and allows this to be what it is. So, you know, I think where we're headed is possibly not a great place, because what happens with these systems, and if you look at the macro systems, and everything gets funneled up and up and up, and we get a, like, talk about the disappearing middle class and all these different things, and because the disparities are getting bigger, it's getting harder to be up here, because all the people, like, you know, wealth gets funneled into a smaller and smaller subset of the population. This starts to break the bottom part where most people are, and then eventually it's going to affect the top, but it won't for a really, really long time. So it's, unfortunately, a lot's going to probably get worse. And a lot of the things that we see are going to like get much worse. And we have doctor shortages happening. Nurses are in short supply. Health systems are starting to like get really, really crazy and wonky. Like, it's not going great. And it's just going to kind of be accelerated. But what we need, though, is like, yeah, sure, the government could just like snap its fingers theoretically and like change it all, but it won't ever happen. So we need this bottom layer of the system to change. And that's part of the reason why, again, private practice, like, maybe it seems small, but it's really important and impactful, because like a group of private practice physicians in a community can really transform and change a community. And that stuff starts to grow and spread. Even if you look at a hospital system, which is like the subsystem of the system of the system, whatever, like the people who are best positioned, again, to change that system are at the bottom, right? The front line, the nurses, the doctors, everybody there, because they really can do, like, the top has to allow it, but the bottom changes it. So we kind of all are living, you know, I don't like the analogy of bottom top, but like, you know, here we are, you know, we're living in this frontline bottom life world of like the system, but like we're best positioned to change it. And so why I'm optimistic about things is because like it's a systems problem, but people change systems and people design systems. So yeah, it's a huge big uphill climb, an uphill battle, but if we want the system to change, people have to believe that it can be, and then just do the work to create that system level change.
I mean, I look globally, right? And just look north, Canada. I mean, ask them, do they like their healthcare system? Because to me, that's a broken system as well. When you're sure. waiting 24 months to get a hip or knee replacement, or you're told you're too old to get a hip or knee replacement, get in line type of thing, or go out behind the barn, like that's a broken model too. So is direct care, do you think that's going to be the answer? Do you think we'll always have some private, public? I mean, Australia kind of has a different type of system there. Mm-hmm. Where do you just foresee, if you could look into your crystal ball over the next 5 to 10 years, where do you think we're going?
I think, I mean, over 5 to 10 years, I think we just see more incremental changes happening. I think as long as we have this sort of amalgamation of like private public, it's not going to change much and it's not going to work great. And then the biggest impact and change we'll see are people exiting the systems. So the bad thing about that is that we have such a large portion of the population that like can't afford direct care. Like direct primary care, they can't afford it. If it was like, you know, the Oklahoma Surgery Center or something, like they can't afford it. And it's why insurance exists. So like on the face, insurance makes a lot of sense, but how it's administered makes no sense. And so I don't think that's like a panacea. That's like not necessarily the answer. The good thing about that, and it'll take time and people are working on it, is like the reason why Cigna, Aetna, United, et cetera, are like, are valuable in what they do from an insurance perspective is because they've built a network. Because if I have United, I can go to almost any doctor, almost any hospital, anywhere that I am in the entire country. But the thing about that is that all we're talking about is a bunch of contracts between two entities and then them basically selling access to a contract that they've already made. Anyone can do that. I'm not saying it's easier, it's not going to take a lot of time. But that's why a lot that's happening in the like self-funded employment world is really exciting and really great, because they're just going and making direct contracts with health systems or with independent practices. And like if you can create these networks, I mean, healthcare is local. They get finicky when they're like, oh, well, if you travel to Florida to go to Disney World with kids and you twist your ankle and then it's like you went to some out of network urgent. But anyways, you can negotiate and do cash rates and do things like that. So, but there's so much, like recalcitrance in that area and these brokers that make tons and tons of money and HR, which is a function that should have no responsibility for healthcare whatsoever, but does. And, you know, the money like doesn't add up and all these different things, but that's starting to shift too. So direct care in that way. Yes. Like direct contracting, between entities, because you're just effectively taking out the middleman and you're not renting a network anymore that you're getting charged too much for that aren't doing a good job and aren't actually a steward of your money at all. So I think that change in the next 5 to 10 years helps a lot. And then I think we start going much faster over the next 20 years because the, you know, employer sponsored self-funded plans represent about $1 trillion in spend in this country. It's a lot of buying power, but it's very fragmented across the millions of businesses that we have across the country. But that's an area that I'd stay close to and watch. And there's a huge upside for private practice too, because there's no reason that like, you know, especially an ortho center like yours or like Chris's or larger ones shouldn't be going and talking directly to employers all the time, because like, you know, you can provide PT for their employees because like everybody's got MSK problems, right? And you can be a center of excellence for that group that has, you know, 200, 300, 400, like they're going to be local. Healthcare is a local endeavor. Mm. So direct contracting is a boon for what we're trying to change in the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I just wanted to mention, I know we're coming to an end here, but Dr. Sinacropi up in Minnesota, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, Preston, or if you've watched our episode with him, but I like his model. And I think it would depend on specialty. I know that like GPs and things like that, it might be a little bit different. But they have like a PSA model with, you know, the local hospitals. I like that model because it gives their private practice and it gives them ability to, you know, we cover our overhead, our payroll or this or that, and we cover call and we're going to bring our cases here, et cetera. But we're going to negotiate, you know, kind of what our fee for service is. And, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that does help with some of the transparency. It takes a lot of cost away from the system, because you're not worried about employing, you know, nine, you know, orthopedic or spine surgeons. You're not worried about, you know, their healthcare coverage or, you know, their, you know, investments, retirements, all that sort of stuff. It's like they do all that internally and we just have a fee. And kind of like you said, it's like, okay, you know, I need to do, you know, see this many patients or do this many cases a week to break even. And then, you know, this is where the upside is. And it's very similar model, but mm-hmm. it creates sort of a transparency, but like a, you know, a reduction of the stress of the system. And I feel like, you know, we can sit here and bitch and moan about the system all we want, but, you know, the system also does support a lot of people, a lot of jobs. They employ a crap ton of people. You know, there are a lot of expenses that go into that. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, they're just sitting on this big pile of money and laughing and sipping cognac and smoking cigars. I'm sure some of them are, but, you know, there are a lot of different things that go into that. And I feel like I see that model in, again, bigger metropolitan areas, you know, potentially in smaller urban areas being more successful. And maybe, like you said, those small incremental changes, I see things like that, you know, happening to help reduce the cost and the stress of the system, but then also giving the physicians those private the ability to, you know, create their own private practice and kind of manage their own destiny.
Yeah, maintains autonomy, independence, yeah, that's but cool. allows some financial stability because you've got that. It's more of a partnership when you have a PSA than adversarial when you're
definitely
in a different model. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah, there's lots of great solutions out there, and that's part of it too. It's just this is great, amazing forum that y'all built and continue to build because there are ways, means, paths, etc. And the more people hear about it, see what's possible, talk to one another about it, you know, I think the better off we're going to be. We need to get out of this age of keeping people in the dark about, you know, as mechanisms of control so they can really sort of see what change is on the horizon.
Yeah, I think that's it. Transparency is key for everybody. But also, I think the one thing I'm getting from this, just talking and listening, is there isn't one answer. There's not one solution for this problem because different practices, different providers are going to think differently, have different strengths. So I think there's always going to be a place for employed hospital physicians, like academic medicine, right? They're not going to be in a private practice because they can't support the research that's necessary. But myself, I'm not an academic physician. That's just not how I'm built. I'm too entrepreneurial for that. And I like to kind of control my own destiny. I'm more of a patient first physician, where that's who I really work for are the patients. I'm not working for an insurance company. I'm not working for a hospital. I'm working to provide care to those that seek my services. So Preston, I just want to thank you for
appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah. Time on a Saturday morning when you could be, you know, making breakfast, eating breakfast with your daughters. But I'm really looking forward to meeting you next week. Having some great conversations, discussions, firing ideas back and forth between our group and Central PA. And
To end on a light note, I did want to let everybody know that we did not plan this. We are wearing the same exact Jordans. We are in all black.
Cement threes.
I'm like, we look like we are red carpet ninjas. No, there is not a uniform when you are on this podcast. So I just wanted to mention
it just happened. So
I think they're awesome. I love it.
I walked in. I thought I was looking at a mirror, but one of those ones that stretches me out because he's about 3 feet taller than me. So.
Nice. Well, now I know I can wear my Jordans when I come up to
PA. No, man. It's kind of a requirement. Yeah, you got not just one pair, you got to bring multiple pairs.
So. Okay. Well, I gotta coordinate. Have one, but
we'll work on that. Well, yeah, Preston, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And for all the listeners, followers out there, please listen, like, subscribe, you know, any guests that you can think about.
Leave
comments, suggestions. You know, we love to, you know, interact, give us feedback on the episode.
Preston, how do people get in touch with you or get a hold of you or follow you? What's the best way?
Just come hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm there probably an unhealthy amount. So Preston Alexander, the Taylor Swift of LinkedIn healthcare writing, as you mentioned, and I respond and we can connect. I'll shoot you my email, my phone number. It's all good.
Cool.
So
thank you both for listeners
Keep tuning in. We got great episodes coming up. Have a great day.
Thanks.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.